Hello everyone, my name is Elijah David, minister of the 12th hour apostolic Sabbatarian congregation on Zion at the 12th hour. And the orientation today is December 11th, 2024. It is the 11th day of Sebeth 2028. We're going to continue our study on Daniel Revelation, taken from Shepherd Rod. Okay, we're at page 41. We're going to just a little review and back up a paragraph from our last study. According to the biblical reckoning, the flood came more than 1,600 years after the creation, for the Yahweh originated the human race through the Adam and Eve. Therefore, one people, one race, one language, and a nation from creation until the flood. The rulership given to Adam, we call the first universal Adamic Empire. Babylon was the second, Medo-Persia was the second, third empire. Grecia as the fourth, with Alexander, represented by the goat. Rome the fifth, the nondescript beast that was wrote, represented by the state of Rome, the broken state of Rome, symbolized by the feet and toes. Okay. So it was symbolized by the feet and toes and the great image of Daniel 2, which is the present unstable civilization, is the sixth. And from the close of the millennium after the resurrection of the wicked until their second death is the seventh and last. Well, we dealt with that yesterday. And from the close, this is where Peter Hallef went wrong. It's supposed to say, and the last, the seventh one, before the close of probation, is the way this thing should read, before the beginning of the millennium, in the 12th parabolic hour, the last parabolic hour of probation for this world. After the resurrection of the wicked, so, we're going to have to say before the resurrection of the wicked at the end of the millennium, to their second death. Okay. The seventh and last. So the seventh and the last is in the 12th parabolic hour before the millennium begins. And that's what we're in right now. We're in the seventh. The last is the eighth. And it comes at the, it comes, actually, just before probation closes also, the eighth, is because that scarlet-colored beast in Revelation 17, with the ten horns, with no crown, and that woman sitting on the back of him, sitting on the seven head, representing all the Christian churches, the white Protestant, Christians, they call them, Catholic Church, is right in the middle of all that. And they go into perdition on that scarlet-colored beast with the ten horns that represents all the wicked kingdoms of the world. And that one mystery Babylon, that they're all together going into perdition. And then the other side of the millennium, they come out of perdition. And then they show up as the eighth beast and the eighth of everything, as always. it signifies completeness. Seven does, but therefore seven such universal empires revealing a complete history of the world denotes the end of sin and its dominion. And I wrote in 2002, this is the beginning of the end in the 12th parabolic hour. And we entered into Revelation 7 at the 2002 at the Passover, with Brother Johnson coming to his end in 2002 at the Atonement. And it says, if we mortals were to devise such a chart by the symbols of the beast, it is certain we would have sufficient intelligence to number every beast in his regular order. Okay. We may not suppose that Yahweh is less thoughtful in his marvelous perfection. Therefore, he has numbered every beast. We must first consider those which represented the Old Testament time by the great metallic image, namely the gold, Babylon, the silver, Medo-Persia, the brass, Grecia. Now, I got some new impressions here about this gold representing Babylon, the first empire after the flood, the second one after creation, and over in Jeremiah in these last days, Isaiah has a prophecy. Said kings are going to come to the brightness of our rising, and they're going to bring their gold and silver. Well, that's the gold standard is your monetary standard for our monetary. When you work for a living, you're supposed to be paid in gold and silver. Okay. Gold is the chief of the metals, which would stand as the number one. Silver is the second to gold, therefore number two. Brass is third to gold, meaning number three. The lion, the bear, and the leopard are numbered in the like manner. The lion is king or chief of the beast, therefore number one, corresponding with the goat. The bear is second unto a lion, therefore number two, corresponding with the silver. The leopard is third unto a lion. Hence number three, corresponding with the brass. These are the first set of the numbers. But there is yet another set of which we must speak. These would bring us back to our subject of what is the meaning of the wings on the lion, as well as on the leopard, and the ribs in the mouth of the bear. Yahweh certainly would not have mapped out the world's history from the flood until the end. And failed to take into the account all of his parts. There must be something in this chart of the historical event to indicate that he has a universal empire before the flood, as previously explained. For that empire, being the first, naturally stands as the number one, Babylon, number two, And that would be the Tower of Babel. Babel is a name for Babylon, where Babylon came from. Ham, Cush, and Nimrod. Medo-Persia, number 3, and Grecia, number 4, the fourth empire since the creation. If this claim is correct, we must find this set of the numbers on the lion, bear, and a leopard. For the wings on the lion denotes empire number 2. The lion, by the nature, is first from the flood, but unnaturally by the 2 wings, second from the creation. For the wings on the lion denote empire number 2. The lion, by the nature, is the first from the flood, but unnaturally by the 2 wings, second from the creation. For the ribs in the mouth of the bear signify empire number 3. The bear, by the nature, is second from the flood, but unnaturally by 3 ribs, he is third from the creation. Ribs are used for wings go in pairs. The 4 wings on the leopard denote that Grecia is the 4th universal empire, for the leopard by nature is third from the flood, but unnaturally by the wings, fourth from the creation. History flies, therefore wings make a perfect symbol. Arise, devour much flesh. Arise, devour much flesh. And the ribs, said the ribs to the bear. Daniel 7:5. For the Medo-Persia opened the way for the imperial wars, therefore arise, devour much flesh. Thus empire after empire plunged into the bloody wars. The ribs in the mouth of the bear cannot mean nations, as some have taught, for nations are symbolized by the horns and not by the ribs. Neither can they denote certain provinces that Medo-Persia could not have conquered, for he has them in his mouth, and it would be inconsistent to suppose that the Persians would have oppressed certain states more than others. Had that been the case, the bear would have stamped upon them as did the non-descriptive, Daniel 7:7. The symbol is contrary to such supposition, and there is neither proof nor lesson that could be derived by any such theory. Pluck the lion's wings. This is our next title. Turn back unto the lion, symbol of the Babylon. Daniel says the first was like a lion and had the eagle's wings. I beheld how the wings thereof were plucked, and it was lifted up from the earth and made to stand upon the feet as a man, and a man's heart was given unto it. Daniel 7:4. For his wings were plucked. The symbol denotes the same as the plucking of the 3 horns from the nondescript piece, Daniel 7:8, if the plucking up of the horns denotes their kingdom was taken from them, then plucking their wings signifies that Babylon, as empire number 2, was to pass away, fulfilling Daniel's interpretation of the handwriting on the wall. This is the interpretation of the thing. Many, Yahweh hath numbered thy kingdom and finished it. Daniel 5:26. Therefore, Babylon fell into the hands of the Medo-Persian king. Thus his wings were plucked, and the Medo-Persian empire number 3 succeeded the lion number 2, man's heart given unto it. After the wings of the lion were plucked, says Daniel, he was made to stand upon his feet as a man, and a man's heart was given unto it. Whatever is meant by the position of the beast and the exchange of the heart, its application is after Babylon had fallen under the Medo-Persian rule, for he stood as a man after the wings were plucked. If we are to acquire the understanding of the symbol, we must first consider the function of the heart, for the symbol itself must be perfect, otherwise the truth cannot be determined. The function of a heart is to preserve the life energy in the body. Let the heart stop and all is lost. This most vital organ is a governor of the body, as an empire is composed of the numerous individuals and their necessity, just so is a living body composed of a multitude of life cells and all of their essentials. As the duty of a king is to preserve the life energy in his kingdom, arise, punish, or uproot the evil, and to supervise the good, just so does the heart. By contraction and expansion, it controls and imparts the flowing living energy in the form of the pure blood. The evidence gathered thus far proves that the heart is a fitting symbol of a king, but we must specify the difference between the human and the beastly heart. Daniel 4:16, speaking of the penalty that was to fall upon the king before he was driven from his throne to be to the field with the beast, said, let his heart be changed from a man's, and let a beast's heart be given unto him, and let seven times pass over him. After the king's heart was changed, he lost his reason, and by nature became equal unto an ox. The same hour was the thing fulfilled upon the Nebuchadnezzar, and he was driven from men. And he did eat grass as the oxen, and his body was wet with the dew of heaven, till his hairs were grown like eagle's feathers, and his nails like the bird's claw. Daniel 4:33. the human intellect does not consist in the external image of mankind, but it rather exists in the human heart. This thought is very emphatically entertained by the scriptures, for out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaketh. Therefore, the symbol man's heart may denote intelligence. However, the symbol cannot infer human vision, but rather a proper understanding of the Yahweh. For the Bible says, the fool has said in his heart, there is no Yahweh. Psalms 53:1. Obtaining a clear vision of the infinite power of the Eternal One is what the Yahweh calls true education. For the sum of the symbol is Babylon was forced to acknowledge the existence of the Most High by removing the king's heart, the beast's heart, and setting up another man's heart. Having made clear what the symbol seems to indicate, we must take a brief survey of the ancient monarchy to see if this interpretation can be fully supported by the symbolical heart. As the everlasting example set forth by the flood for the future generations had failed to teach the Chaldean rulers Yahweh's power and existence. Not willing that any should perish, made a supreme effort to save that nation. For the Yahweh is not slack concerning his promise, as some men count slackness, but is long-suffering unto us, word, not willing that any should perish, but that all should come to repentance. 2 Peter 3:9. When the dream of the great image was given unto Nebuchadnezzar, his memory of the object was blotted out, but the impression left in his mind was greatly increased. After the urgent demand from the wise men had failed to reveal the king's dream, Daniel, by the divine revelation, unmasked the mysterious phenomena by the interpreting of the dream. For this wonderful miracle should have converted the king and all the wise men of Babylon to be to the Hebrew worship. For by the power of the Daniel Yahweh, they had escaped the death penalty, but there was no change for the better. Though the king honored Yahweh with his lips, his heart drew away from him. For the king destroyed not the idols in the land, but in his blindness proceeded to set up superior ones. For shortly after the interpretation of the dream, he demanded of all his subjects the worship of the golden image which he had set up in the plain of Dura. Read the 3rd chapter of Daniel. For the refusal of the 3 Hebrews to bow down unto the idol, and the miracle by which they were saved from the fiery furnace, had deeply affected the minds of the rulers. But it too failed to change the king's heart. Again, he honored the Yahweh, the God of gods, with his lips, but not by his deeds. For the king's unrighteous deeds made it necessary for a supernatural penalty. Hence, a tremendous effort to brief him to bring him unto a realization of his dependence upon the Creator was necessary. The dream given him in Daniel 4 of the great tree, a symbol of himself, and his interpretation by the Daniel. Daniel convinced the hard-hearted monarch of his truth, and the judgment that was to fall upon him, except to repent. Daniel said, "Wherefore, O king, let my counsel be acceptable unto thee, and break off thy sins by righteousness, and thine iniquities by showing mercy unto the poor. If it be a lengthening of thy tranquility, at the end of the 12 months, he walked in the palace of the kingdom of Babylon. The same hour was the thing fulfilled upon the Nebuchadnezzar." Okay. "And he was driven from men and did eat grass as the oxen, and his body was wet with the dew of the heaven, till his hairs were grown like the eagles, and feathers, and his nails like the bird's claws." Daniel 4:27, 29, and 33. At the end of the painful experience, the king said, "Now I, Nebuchadnezzar, praise and extol and honor the King of the Heaven, all whose works are in the truth and his ways of the judgment, and those that walk in the pride, he is able to abase." Daniel 4:37. "So he acknowledged the power of the Eternal One, worshipped him, and uttered words of the brass with a most sublime expression. The king failed to surrender his heathen heart and renounce the pagan system of the worship. He failed to embrace the great importance of the imparting of the knowledge of the Yahweh unto his posterity, for the tranquility and endurance of his kingdom." These wonderful experiences were for an object lesson for the future king. Shortly after the fulfillment of the dream, the king's grandson had ascended the throne. In his heathen custom, he ventured to defy the Yahweh of Yahweh and the King of Kings, who is able to make oxen out of the kings and kings out of the oxen, and rulers out of slaves. "For the promotion cometh neither from the east, nor from the west, nor the south, but Yahweh is the judge. He pulleth down one and setteth up another." Psalm 75:6-7. "For the sacred vessels had never before been defiled by any king, as in the Belshazzar's drunken feast. For the Yahweh will forbear until man steps over the boundary line. This Belshazzar did by bringing the sacred vessels before his lord's concubines and heathen gods. That's the appearance of the handwriting on the wall. His guilty conscience troubled him. His loins were loose and his knees smote one against the other. For the Belshazzar, like his father, like his father, ignored Daniel and summoned the wise men of Babylon to interpret the writing, though he should have known their inability to reveal the secret. At last Daniel was called, and at his appearance he said, "This is the interpretation of the thing," meaning Yahweh hath numbered thy kingdom and finished it. Tekel, thou art weighed in the balances and art found wanting. Perez, the kingdom is divided. Okay. And given unto the Medes and the Persians, Daniel 5:26-28. The precious experiences of his father that were at his excess could have been everlasting blessing, but by ignoring the power of Yahweh, the king reversed the benefits from a blessing to a curse and brought a final end unto his kingdom. Every resource to make the lion Babylon stand up like a man under the rule of the Chaldean king had been exhausted and every effort failed. Therefore, the time had come for the Yahweh to apply the last remedy to the lion kingdom. Cyrus, of whom Yahweh had spoken by his prophet many years in advance, was granted to enter the capital city of the Chaldean king. See Isaiah 45:1. Babylon, as empire number 2, passed away, and the symbol of the plucked wings met its fulfillment. And that night was the Belshazzar, the king of the Chaldeans, slain. The lion's heart is a symbol of the heathen king, Belshazzar, who was slain. And thus the beastly heart was removed. Man proposes that oftentimes another power over which he has no control disposes. Daniel was made first president over the 120 princes because an extra spirit was found in him. Both Cyrus and Darius were converted unto the worship of the true Yahweh. Therefore, the everlasting arm which intervenes in the affairs of the mankind set up a king of his own choice. Okay, let's continue. In this manner, the symbols met their fulfillment, and the lion was lifted up from the earth and made to stand upon the feet as a man, and a man's heart was given unto it. The heart is a fitting symbol of the ruler of a nation. For the contrast between a righteous and an unrighteous king is as vastly different as between the human and the beastly heart. The heart is a life-giving energy to the human body, just as a king is the head of a nation. After freedom had been granted unto the Jews, Cyrus in his proclamation said, "Thus saith Cyrus, king of the Persians, for the Yahweh of the heaven hath given me all the kingdoms of the earth, and he has charged me to build him an house at Jerusalem, which is in Judah. Who is there among you of all his people? His Yahweh be with him, and let him go up to Jerusalem, which is in Judea, and build the house of the Yahweh of Israel. He is the Yahweh which is in Jerusalem." Ezra 1, 2, and 3. This godly influence of the kings of the Medo-Persia did not wear out until years later. Now, for the decree made by the Tsars was written in a roll and placed of the Akhmeta in the palace that is in the province of the Medes. Years later, the roll being found by Darius, the edict was immediately carried out. Cyrus had decreed that all should make a free will offering, and the king himself contributed without limit. He said, "Moreover, I make a decree that you shall go to the elders of the Jews for the building of the house of Yahweh, that of the king's goods, even of the tribute beyond the river." Forthwith, expenses to be given to these men, that they be not hindered, Ezra 6:8, for the future decree, for he further decreed that all the needs to maintain the sacrificial services be given them day by day without fail. Then he added, that they may offer sacrifices of the sweet savors unto the Yahweh of heaven, and pray for the life of the king. And at and all his sons, Ezra 6:10. Nebuchadnezzar professed conversion after his wonderful experience with the Yahweh of heaven, and declared, "And all the inhabitants of the earth are reputed as nothing." And he did according unto his will in the army of heaven and among the inhabitants of the earth, and none can stay his hand or say unto him, "What doest thou?" At the same time, my reason returned unto me, and for the glory of my kingdom, my honor and brightness returned unto me, and my counselors and my lords sought unto me, and I was established in my kingdom, and excellent majesty was added unto me. Now I, Nebuchadnezzar, praise and extol and honor the King of heaven, all whose works are truth and his ways judgment. And those that walk in pride he is able to abase. Daniel 4:35-37. Though the sublime words spoken by the Chaldean king seem to reveal a change of the heart, his works showed failure and what his lips proclaimed. What a contrast between the Babylonian monarch and the Medo-Persian king. Nebuchadnezzar declined to set Yahweh's people free. He refused to restore the sacred vessel to the King of Heaven. He made no decree for the rebuilding of the house of Yahweh. He gave no gift of any kind to the King of Kings. He imparted not the knowledge of the Yahweh unto the people. He left his children and his household to worship the heathen gods of wood and stone. He made no effort to give Yahweh the glory save with his lips. Though we have these living examples before us, yet how often we admit by our lips that which is right and true, and make no move to reach for the stretched out arm of the divine love. Multitudes are aping the standard set by the ancient monarch. The people draweth nigh unto me with their mouth, and honoreth me with their lips, but their heart is far from me. Matthew 15:8. Though Nebuchadnezzar failed in these sacred things, Yahweh in his great mercy saved the king. Yahweh bore long with the Babylonian king, but once proud monarch had become a humble child of Yahweh, the tyrannical overbearing ruler, a wise and compassionate king, he who had defied and blasphemed the Yahweh of heaven, now acknowledged the power of the Most High and earnestly sought to promote the fear of the Yahweh and the happiness of his servants. Under or with the rebuke of him who is the King of Kings and Sovereign of Sovereigns, for the Nebuchadnezzar hath learned at last the lesson which all rulers need to learn. Prophets and Kings, page 521. The Bear and the Leopard, our next subtitle of our study, for the example made of the Babylonian monarch, of the Babylonian monarchs, should have an object lesson unto all successive kings. For the godly influence of the Tsars might also have been retained, but the kings of the Medo-Persia, like the Chaldeans, were looking forward to worldly glory without fear of him who can set up the kingdoms and dispose of the kings. For the priceless lesson taught by the punishment of the Chaldean kings should have been a blessing unto them. But in their vain imagination, they departed from the source of the true wisdom and from the power that is never failing. Thus that which was intended as a blessing became a condemnation. Therefore the kings of the Medo-Persia grew worse than the kings of the Grecia, whose idols were their gods, and perverse appetite their only rule of life. Thus again, the time had come for the ribs in the mouth of the bear to speak, arise and devour much flesh. Therefore the arm of the omnipotent was withdrawn from the Persian king, and that would be Darius, and Alexander, with the swiftness of an eagle, marched up on the world history. And in this manner, their words arise devout, must first met their fulfillment. Says Daniel, and as I was considering, behold, an he goat came from the west on the face of the whole earth, and touched not the ground. And the goat had a notable horn between his eyes, and he came to the ram that had two horns, which I had seen standing before the river, and ran into him in the fury of his power. And I saw him come close unto the ram, and he was moved by the colour against him, and he smote the ram and brake his two horns, and there was no power in the ram to stand before him. But he cast him down to the ground and stamped upon him, and there was none that could deliver the ram out of his hand. The ram which thou sawest having two horns are the kings of Medo and Persia. And the rough goat is the king of Grecia, and the great horn that is between his eyes is the first king. Daniel 8:5-7, 20 and 21. Therefore Alexander, whose love for the conquest knew no bounds, was the first to successfully lead the West against the East. But no sooner had Alexander conquered the empire of Persia than he engaged in a drunken debauch and passed away while yet in his youth. Thus the horn of the goat was broken off from between his eyes, and for it came up four notable ones towards the four winds of the heaven. For the Alexander, not having a successor to inherit the throne, the kingdom was divided between his four generals, namely Cassander, Lamachus, Ptolemy, and Seleucus. Thus time and providence brought about the four-headed leopard beast. Okay, for the ram and the he-goat, the entire conflict between the nations is symbolized by the ram and the goat, with the various horns coming up and breaking off. Why a ram and a goat? Why not some other species of the animal? For Yahshua gives the answer. And before him shall be gathered all nations, and he shall separate them one from another, as a shepherd divideth his sheep from the goats. And he shall sit the sheep on his right hand, but the goats on the left. Matthew 25:32-33. By these domestic beasts, inspiration conveys the thought that the inhabitants of the earth are but sheep and goats, true and false religion. It also signifies that wars are a strife between good and evil. But why Medo-Persia by a ram and Grecia by a goat? Why not the reverse? The kings of the Medo-Persian Empire became believers in the true Yahweh, as previously explained, thus having principles contrary unto those of Grecia. For that reason, Medo-Persia was represented by a ram and Grecia by a goat. Wonderful it is to note how perfect and thoughtful was the great wisdom and care of the Infinite One as exercised to devise these symbols. Only omnipotence can invent such perfect prophetic art foretelling the historical events. Kingdom of the brass rules the world. Now this is where we're at. This is where we're at next. and typical Persia now has set up to rule the world with Donald Trump and his last president, J.D. Vance. So now our next subtitle is Kingdom of the Brass, Grecia rules the world. It has been previously explained that the lion, the bear, and the leopard beast are divinely numbered, for the leopard being the fourth empire from the creation, and as the numbers in that fashion stop with him, naturally the question would arise, why not continue the numerical order with the beast that followed the leopard? There are several reasons for the change with that particular beast. As Rome was slowly rising from within the Grecian Empire, she finally absorbed the last Grecian division, and the Ptolemy dynasty became a province of the Roman state about 27 B.C. Thus the Old Testament closed with Grecia, and with Rome, the new began. Okay. Therefore, between Grecia and Rome lies a dividing line. It also noted that the beasts representing the Old Testament are hornless, but the ones in the New are with the horns, all of which signifying the close of the typical and the commencement of the antitypical period. Okay, it says, for the numerals of the Bible are like rich veins of the metal beneath. For the surface of the earth, thousands walk over these unknown treasures until some unseen power brings them to the surface. We know that the Trinity is best expressed by the use of the terms Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit. Likewise, we express Yahweh's attributes in the three terms, namely, omnipresent, omniscience, and omnipotence. This feature could be greatly enlarged upon. If three is a symbol of the triune Yahweh, four must designate that which proceeds from him, as revealed in the creation. For the cherubims consist of the four living creatures, each having the face of a lion, a calf, a man, and an eagle, respectively. There are four regions of the earth, east, north, south, and west, which is expressive of the completeness of the direction. Likewise, winter, spring, summer, and autumn covers a complete circle of the season. We have already observed that there were four universal empires in the history of the world from creation until the crucifixion, cover the 4,000-year period. We may also note the fact and the connection with this subject, that there is a combination of the threefold with the fourfold, as clearly seen in the work of the creation, in which the first 4 days were employed in the forming of the sphere, and the remaining three in the creation of the living creatures, and culminating in a Sabbath rest. For the fourth day saw the material substance of the creation finished, and on the fifth and sixth day was the peopling of the earth. In the book of the Revelation, under the head, or with the head of the seven seals, we observed that the first four seals were clearly separated from the last three by the symbols of the four horses. Thus it appears that the fourfold measure in each case precedes the threefold, just as in the creation order, each division culminating in the seven of the perfection. For this reason, there are four sections in the great image of the Daniel. Two, four beasts in the Daniel's vision, four wings and four heads on the leopard, with whom the number in that fashion ceased. Thus it is evident that the Old Testament code with a symbolic number four, the leopard beast, showing that all the necessary provision for the salvation of the human famine was completed under or with the dispensation of this prominent number four. As it terminated about the time of the crucifixion, thus this number is used in the connection with the incidences to signify earth-wide earthwide. All right. Well, this brings us to the end of our study for this day. We're going to bring us to an end and put off. Our next study will be the nondescript beast on page 56 of Shepherd Rod, Volume 2. The nondescript beast. This is going to be a whole new study that we're going to pay close attention to. Let us close now with a song.